Coming at you from Scratch and Wolf Studio. It's that time again to rage across the internet. It's your very favorite Werewolf the Apocalypse podcast. As always, I'm your host, Porter. Sitting to my left, the man who knows the banana way, Mr. Daniel Tyson.
Banana way!
Hey, everybody. And sitting to my right, absolutely no one, but coming right through the Weaver's web, it's our old buddy. You got to pray for this roller boy. It's CJ.
I was not expecting that, but I guess I'll just have to roll with that intro.
Beautiful.
And another successful star to everybody. How are we doing, guys?
I fucking love movie night.
Doing good. Came off a real good movie night, that's for sure.
Yes. Oh, yes. Man. We did, as of this recording, the last night was movie. It was April Fool's at that.
Which is even better.
Right. And if I were a different person, I would have screwed with you guys with the movies, but we...
No, we had a good time. They were shitty movies.
Oh, it was beautiful. It was beautiful.
That's kind of the point of those nights.
No, it is. You know, we have a lot of fun with those, and we had a lot of fun last night. Yeah, we did.
Banana way.
Just changed my Discord name for a while to Roller Boy Porter. But then, I did it last night, so, you missed it entirely. A couple people caught it.
I definitely did not even notice it.
And then, this morning, I was talking to some folks in Discord who were not there for movie night.
Oh, no!
And so there was no context, and questions came up, and I'm like, I'm just going to put this back to Porter.
Even left the real lawyer part out?
No, I was disbarred.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah.
What'd you do?
I cannot talk about it because of my lawyer's advice.
Oh. So investigation still pending, huh?
I have been advised not to say anything.
I mean, legally you can say that.
Radio for three. How are we doing?
But on the way.
All right.
How many times am I going to say that?
Hopefully never again.
Do we need to just instate a rule for this episode? Take a shot every time you hear banana way?
You know, I am no longer a real lawyer, but I think that's probably a bad idea. Because I don't trust this man here to my left.
I'm going to try and not say it again.
I really, really hope so.
I'm trying. I'm trying. Oh, shit. All right.
So that was meaningless to so many of you, and I apologize, kind of. Welcome to the show.
And if you want it to be meaningful, you should get on our Discord and join our backers, because those movie nights are so much fun, and you can have fun with us.
He's not wrong. There was a lot of moving parts there, but he's not wrong. You know, definitely you should come see us on the Discord. It's a great place. We're all kind of busy right now, so we're not on as much as we would like to. I know.
But we're getting back.
Yeah, we are around, though. You know, that's a place you can definitely interact with us directly and some of the other fine folks in the Discord.
Yeah. We built an awesome community.
Right, and you never know what can happen. I mean, CJ, we did not know until he showed up on the Discord.
And look at that. Now you're a star every other week.
Well, I think you're always a star, buddy.
You're a star in our eyes. But you're a star in everyone else's eyes every other week.
I guess I'll have to take that. But yeah, no, it literally did just start from hanging out on the Discord, coming a backer, joining the game team, and then boom, I'm here.
Right?
Right on.
I mean, that's exactly it.
It's the right way to do things. I almost said it and then realized, no, I just said 2 minutes ago that I wasn't going to say it.
I'm amazed by your restraint today. How am I the put together one?
Good question.
Shit.
It's a quick show, but yeah. It's the Discord, it's the movie nights, and that's even like the bottom tier is the movie nights. So, the movie nights, the game team, the postmortem series... And if you're not really sure, but you still want to get in on those, we have the bundles available.
And what are how do you do these things? What do those things mean?
You join up on the Ko-Fi.
That's right. Thank you, CJ. Danny left that part out. So if this was your first episode, that was just a bunch of stroke talk.
If it's your first, I'm sorry, but welcome.
He's not usually this drunk.
I'm not even drunk.
You should have ran with that.
I'm not even that drunk. Yes.
This Ko-Fi. Is a bit, yes.
That's the Ko-Fi. And becoming backers, supporting us, we greatly and immensely appreciate, and those are our rewards to you for being so kind and generous to us. Did I fix it for you? Is that good enough?
Now I don't think he is drunk. He's getting a little belligerent now. Should you hear in this siege?
Oh, yeah.
Is this good enough for you, Mr. Man?
I'm just surprised didn't mention the fact that, you know, Discord's free and you get to it through the website.
And what is that website?
RageAcrossTheInternet.com.
.com.
.com!
I like that one. Jesus Christ.
Yes. Website, so. Forums, Discord link. It's there. The Ko-Fi. Hey, you know what? You guys just listening, that's already a huge deal of support. So thank you. And an extra thank you for those backers who do go with a little bit of extra as far as financially. Greatly appreciate it. But all of you listening, that's there. Thank you. Let's do a show.
That's our host, Danny, today. He's getting ready for the coup.
The coup?
Great. I think we know what happened to Tom now.
He flew the coop?
Well, speaking of high and of flying.
Maybe I am drunk. What the fuck?
Today we're here to talk about the Korax.
Oh, just believe it or not.
We finally get around to the Gaia's free pass.
That's true. Now, I know it was only a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. You're saying, you might be saying, those long-term listeners, thanks, guys. You might be saying to yourselves, didn't you guys just do this with Kaysen? No, we did not, because that was Savage Age.
Yeah, I was going to say, we did the Savage Age version.
Right, these are the canonical Korax. So I love my alliteration. It's crazy.
Canonically.
Yeah, so we're steering clear of Rapex territory. We're not talking Savage Age today. We're talking the regular Korax.
The regular Korax.
That's a different thing, so too bad.
Well, I mean, we have the whole Pharah series, and we have the books, and we're going through these. So why would we skip it?
No, exactly. I'm just, you know, they are kind of close together. And we normally don't do that kind of thing, but look, we're running out of Pharah, thankfully.
I mean, it's not like they're going to get a free pass this time and miss a Pharah episode.
Hey, see that? See that?
Might be Gaia's free pass, but they're not RAI's free pass.
No, but we do like the Korax around here, which is, you know, something, or maybe Danny doesn't.
No, I'm not saying I don't. It's very much, why are they the free pass? And we learn it. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, maybe we'll be getting into that. But yeah, it's certainly something you don't hear around the RAI offices. The ball's on me.
I mean, just this office right here.
Is this? It's a studio. It's not. It's a lot of things.
It is. HQ.
But it's something you don't hear a whole lot around here. Is a probably unanimous pro Pharah agenda around here. But I think it's safe to say everyone's a fan of the Korax.
Yes. Yeah, everyone, including the tribes.
So let's get into it.
All right. So Korax being the were-ravens.
That's correct.
And we've said it hundreds of times over and then our entire existence of the podcast, the free pass.
Well, that's our joke, but that's not their actual role.
Right. Just right off the bat, though, their version of the creation myth. I'm just laughing so hard as I'm reading this, because he just goes on, and obviously we know how about the how these history sections work, and it's one person talking to another, telling them their story. And he starts talking about how, you know, yes, we are the loudmouths and we are the truth seekers. So we know what all of the other shapeshifters' versions of creation is. But you know what the real version is? Yeah, neither do I. You know why I know that? Because it's all bullshit. Nobody was there. Complete bullshit. None of us were there. No one knows what the real thing is. I fucking love that.
No, it's definitely a refreshing take. You know, it's very, I mean, it's honest.
Yeah. But he also states that we might not know what the real version is, but there are most of us, as in the Korax, who are trying to figure it out. And some even have gone mad because it has not happened yet.
Yeah, it's one of those questions that a lot of the Korax have to keep themselves from thinking about, because if they think about, they're going to want an answer, and the fact that they can't find an answer just drives them crazy.
Which, again, speaks to their nature and their purpose, and, you know, I think we kind of jumped both ahead and behind.
A little bit, yeah.
There.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is while we joke here around the RAA bullpen about them being Gaia's free pass, that is not their actual purpose. Right? And so what is their purpose, gentlemen?
They are the ones that to gather secrets and share information. That's their entire thing, is to listen, watch, and tell everyone about it.
Yeah.
In contrast, of course, to the Bastet, who were originally Gaia's secret keepers and then fired for being dicks about it. Yes, I'm paraphrasing, but only barely.
Barely, yes. No, but like I said, the story in the beginning where he's telling them what's going on, he goes, "It's." I mean, paraphrasing, but yeah, we are Gaia's loudmouths. We are the loudmouths, yes, but we're also the truth seekers. So, and yes, they are. They are the ones to pass the information around to everyone. And it starts off to everyone necessary, but they're such loudmouths that it becomes more than that. Just everyone.
Sure. I mean, they're there to bear witness.
Yes.
To what? Everything.
Everything. Yeah. But knowing that they're, you know, their version of the creation myth, everyone else's version is complete bullshit. There is no doubt, however, that Worm is crazy. And Worm is crazy because of Weaver. It's all Weaver's fault. Right there. There's no doubt in anyone's mind that's what happened.
Well, that tends to be the universal throughout the various versions. With the possible exception of the Bastet. I think the Bastet was something like, because we're awesome. We're so cool, everyone else got crazy. I think, mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm taking extra shots at the Bastet today.
Well, they even go back as far as, you know, when Raven was created, Weaver caught the worm, but Raven tried to stop the fighting before anything happened. So, you know, Raven being such good listeners, Raven was kind of like the mediator between Worm and Weaver. Obviously fighting. I mean, why else would they go crazy over each other? So Raven suggested that they would take turns being the quote-unquote dominant one. You know, Age of Creation, Age of Destruction, back and forth. And then Raven convinced Worm, hey, just be a good sport about it. Let Weaver go first. That way there's no argument. Because arguing is what made everyone else mad too. But when that happened, that's when Weaver put up the net, so to speak.
And I will say in my mind, that is an interesting take, that it was, of course, you know, it's the Korax. Of course, Raven's the one that's like the big important player here. But they set up that deal, the arrangement. The Weaver will take a turn for however many years, and then the Worm gets a turn, and it goes back to the Weaver. And it is setting up almost like, yeah, the Weaver decided to be the tricksy and sneaky one who's like, yeah, no, it's my turn. You're not going to get one for a while, Weaver. Just keep waiting. Or Worm, just keep waiting. Just keep waiting. Eventually the Worm goes crazy. And now, yeah, no, once the Worm breaks out, it's going to take its turn. And it's going to be just as long as the Weaver's. And that's not a good thing for anybody. And it's just an interesting idea that it was set up to be this cycle versus just, yeah, no, the Weaver stopped the worm. The worm's going crazy. Now the worm's taking its ball and going home and taking everything else with it.
Essentially, yeah. I just thought it was hilarious. That's all.
No, it's all right. I mean, it's, in a roundabout way, it reminds me of the, makes me think of the new issue one rather. And I don't see maybe it reminds me, but you know, and like, I loved that version.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you remember, that's when the worm showed up in the studio that day. I believe that's where that first happened.
Probably
when he showed up and voiced himself.
Voiced himself.
I mean, well, obviously, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
It's reenactment. Yeah. You know. Hey everybody, I want the humans.
It's just an interesting little case with the spin on the creation myth we know about why everything's all fucked up to begin with.
Agreed.
And one thing I would say that might be somewhat important to get to originally is, why was Raven created? Why did Gaia create Raven in the first place? Because it shows one of my interesting takes on the fact that openly states Gaia is not omniscient and not omnipotent.
Right.
Like, she just creates things, sets them out in the world, and isn't always able to keep track of them. So she created the Ravens to, once again, bear witness and come back to tell her.
Yeah, they were like the, what was the word they used? Second-hand version? Mm-hmm. They were essentially created, and it states that they were the last of the changing breed, but clearly this was before the Kitsune came out. So, yeah, they were created, like, as in I guess, the littlest sibling, to keep an eye on everyone and bring back all that information to Gaia. But they're such loudmouths.
But that's by design.
Right. And there, it does. It states that we kind of can't help ourselves but to give way too much information.
And then the transfer of information is such an important part of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, maybe we're jumping around a bit here.
That's
and
fine.
Maybe that's, yeah, it's just going to be how the world is.
Have you listened to the show?
Yeah, right. Welcome to the show. Is something I thought was cool was, you know, obviously being travelers and being, you know, those the witnesses and those who are the arbiters of that of information, they're big on language.
Mm-hmm.
And something I thought was cool is they like to use kennings, which is, if you're not familiar with the term, It's like where a phrase will be a stand-in for a concept. This makes it easier, or rather harder for eavesdroppers to understand. There's an example given in the book. You know, over the whale road, Edge Hate divides Moon's children. And that would tell them that a couple packs of Garu are set to rumble down the particular bridge, where whale road is the ocean, and Edge Hate means fighting, and so on and so forth. You know, be able to speak in code through turn of phrase like that, which is a pretty neat concept, right? And it can be fun to expand on too, because you know that's the example given might be a little much.
Yeah, it's an extreme not an extreme comparison, but like a
it's a bit of an extreme example.
Thank you.
Sure, something maybe a bit harder. Like if that example might be a bit difficult to grasp,
mm-hmm.
And especially for like a storyteller or someone playing a Korax to be able to take something like that and just generate more on your own, that might be a bit daunting. So maybe you consider using like movie quotes.
Okay.
You know, to send the message without sending the message. A good real world example, actually is, a dear friend of mine and Danny's as well, who we've referenced a couple times on air.
Talking about Chase?
Yeah.
Okay.
Chase and I, we worked together for many years.
Yeah.
He was my boss. Hence the nickname I gave him, the boss. But, you know, he was very much a company man.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you followed the rules to the letter, and that's the way that is. You are a good soldier. But, so, you know, he'd go in these meetings, and he would learn shit, you know, about the future of the company, about way things might be changing or whatever, things he couldn't share with us.
Oh, I know what you're saying.
So what he would do is he would speak in Star Wars, as I would call it. He's a big Star Wars guy.
I remember some of these.
You know, so he would tell you everything we needed to know,
mm-hmm.
but he would veil it through Star Wars quotes. So if you were listening, you knew everything that happened in that damn meeting.
Yep.
And if you weren't listening, he was just talking, you know, he was just feeling like quoting Star Wars today. You know, he was talking about the Empire or some shit. You know, I don't know why he is such a big fan of Grand Moff Tarkin. Well, Tarkin is the assistant director. You know, the Death Star is corporate. This means that. This is this. So if you know that shit, he's telling you everything you need to know in a way that no prying ears, you know?
Yep. Wow. And then we call it the final stand, if you will. That was probably my favorite one.
But I mean, you get the concept.
Yes. It's his business, but yes, I can't get what you're saying.
Yep.
Yeah. You know what it also reminds me of? Oh, sorry, CJ, go ahead.
Oh, no, it was just like, yeah, it's a fun little interesting idea. They're like, yeah, no, I would not necessarily go through the effort if I had a Korax of like writing out an entire Korax cat for them to go with. But yeah, no, pulling out those quotes to get some bits of information across, or, you know, like I like the Whale Road one for, you know, saying something near the river or near the ocean or something. Like that's a clever little one that you could drop into just any conversation and might get a little odd looks, but anybody who doesn't know has no idea what you're saying.
No, it's true, and I think it's a good example, but ultimately I think from a practicality standpoint,
yeah, it's a little bit of like the Garu tongue where you're not going to go through the entire like growling, yipping and barking and stuff.
Right. You can just talk and we can just all understand that it's, yeah.
So, you know, it also reminds me the movie Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. You ever seen that one?
Of course.
Oh, it's one of my favorite movies of its time. But if you watch the DVD, there's actually a special feature section of them talking their, you know, we'll go with their language, because it's still in English, but it's the words they use and what those words actually meant. And it's so fucking funny, because it's a lot of rhymes. Like, oh, he said these things, but the words he meant were actually the words that rhyme with it. And there's some that I really probably shouldn't say on air.
Don't.
I'm not going. It reminded me, again, same thing.
No, absolutely.
Things you can say so prying ears don't really understand. But if you're listening, you completely get it and you know what's going on.
That's something according to the Korax is their history. Mm-hmm. Something I thought was interesting is they weren't always they weren't always black. is that the ravens used to be pure white with gold eyes.
Gold eyes, yeah.
Which is for me like a super cool image.
Oh yeah, it's super cool. But it's that story is hilarious. It's Luna handing out her gifts and auspices, you know, to those who serve her. And Helios kind of gets upset.
Well, Helios is kind of a knob, so.
Yeah, he takes his ball and goes home, essentially. Almost leads to, like, the Ice Age, and it's so cold that even the Gerhall are freezing. Again, these are quotes from the Korax here. But it gets to the point where, all right, only Korax can fix this. But we're just going to give him an offer he won't understand.
Because there is one aspect of the Korax that we haven't really hit upon right now. They are tricksters as well as information dealers and gatherers.
Yeah, I was hoping you kind of jump in a little bit. But yeah, absolutely. It's a bit of a trick what they did. So what's going on here is the Raven essentially brings Amir to go see Helios. Helios is sulking. He's being a little bitch. So he knocks on Helios's door, and it's super dark in there because, again, he's sulking. As soon as Helios opens that door, the first thing he sees is himself for that mirror. Helios doesn't like it. Sulks some more.
Yeah, there might be a little more context there of why, you know, specifically, like, why Helios actually came out to check the mirror and why he didn't like it, because the Korax, to try and get Helios to come out and actually shine his light back on the world, started talking about this new sun deity thing that everybody's enjoying, everybody's liking. They get Helios to open the door. He sees the light off the mirror and goes back to sulk because, oh my god, it's true. They don't need me anymore. Why am I even doing all this? And this is where Raven cuts a deal with Helios to, you know, hey, yeah, no, we'll, you can come back. We'll make sure the other guy goes away.
Yeah, we can get your job back. We got this for you. Don't worry. Yes, the words he even used were like, our new solar-powered buddy, we can get you to replace him. You'll get your job back. But Helios is so eager to get that job back, he goes so fast back down to the Umbra, and Raven can barely keep ahead of him, to the point where he got so close that he burned Raven and turned their fur or their feathers from white to black. Yep, that's why Raven are no longer white with gold eyes.
But there's also the fact of, yeah, no, Raven got Helios's job back, so Helios is paying Raven back with a bunch of gifts.
Yep, which makes it now so Korax are more vulnerable to gold rather than silver, because now they favor Helios over Luna.
They talk about that later in the book, you know, because the Korax are not affected by silver. I mean, they'll also wear silver all day long, which can be helpful to them when dealing with Garu, who are maybe a little aggressive.
So it's not just a fashion statement.
It's also a little self-defense sometimes. It's a
self-defense, nice.
You know, it's also worth noting that because of that, the lack of, or the rather, that they are children of Helios and Raven. They got the dual citizenship, if you will. they don't have auspices.
Right. Their one job is to spread the information.
They also don't have totems. It's just Raven.
Yep, Raven.
Yep.
That's it. And it was, I like the kind of the spin they put on that too, is like Raven's smarter than that. Raven doesn't trust his people to wander. So it's like, we're going to consolidate this shit. You're going to have to deal with me. Like, just me. I don't want you running over here. No. We'll never see you again, man. You got to get the ADD in check. Okay, you get over. You're going to work with me exclusively.
Ooh, shiny.
Exactly. And, you know, they are very much attracted to shiny objects.
Oh, yeah. It even said, like, they have to do, like, rolls to make sure that they don't get too distracted when there's something shiny around. Which, I would hate playing a Korax at that point, because you'd have to do rolls all the goddamn time.
Well, I think that depends on how big of an asshole your storyteller is.
Yeah, and how literal he is with the whole shinies. Like, are you going to go pecking at that soda can that just so happened to have the paint stripped away?
I mean, if the light hits it just right.
Yes. I think something, you talk about playing a Korax, though, I think something that people forget about the Korax is that, you know, because one of the most important things they do is record. You know, they're witnesses, and you know, they see horrible shit all the time.
Yeah.
And that kind of wears on you, which is why, you know, you think of Korax light. I mean, there's the fast talking aspect, and sometimes there's more of the comedic aspect and the trickster thing, but that's related.
Right.
You know, for all the shit that they see and they have to do, because let's bring this up, is part of what they do is record the last sights of the dying.
Ah, yeah, the eyes.
Yes. Which, yikes.
It's so weird.
And to expand on this, and you know, this obviously comes from, you know, folklore. It's right. Everything. Look, shit comes from shit. Let's just. But yeah, they do this by drinking from the eyes of the dead.
Now, again, you said it from folklore, but like, they only get to pick one.
Right. It's one, and that's relevant. Each eye offers a different perspective of said death. You know, like the right eye offers the good in the death, if you will, and the right, the bad. I mean, this is, you know, we're distilling this down here. And it's known that, like, you know, they do this and they get visions. You know, they see through the perspective of that person. And again, they see based on which eye they choose. They can also share that memory with other Korax.
Right.
By literally baby birding the eye into the mouth of their buddy.
As long as just like a little bit of that eye jellies in their stomach,
they
baby bird it into somebody. That's an actual quote.
No, it's true. It's like, hey, fucking Larry, you got to see this. Let me puke in your mouth. That happens.
So it's funny.
I mean, it is, but it's like, Jesus, that's like Sam Raimi funny. That's Evil Dead funny.
I'll take that, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it's important because there's some dark shit there. And I mean, that's why they lean into that laughter and into that lightness to balance out the shit they have to deal with and that they see.
Right.
But it's easy to let that kind of thing slide or to forget it. I hate people. And it's kind of goes back to that Ragabash mentality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see it with the Korax. We see it with the Ragabash, where I'm just going to be wacky and jokey and kind of stupid and maybe an asshole.
That's not what it's about, though.
Right. You know, and it's important to have that perspective of why they're like that.
Mm-hmm.
As we just mentioned, it's to balance out the darkness, and there needs to be that darkness. Otherwise, you're just being an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because again, they only get to pick one of the two eyes. I mean, I guess you can do both, but you're only going to get visions from the one.
I mean, like, if you got a fetish and you're just into that. I don't mean like an item with a spirit in it. I mean, you're a weirdo.
Yes, I know what you meant. But yeah, you know, and to me, it's more on storyteller, and I'm sure it's going to depend on story, but like, as the Korax, which one are you going to pick? Which one's going to be more important for you to decide which eye you got to do?
Well, yeah, that's on the storyteller. That's on the player in the context of the situation, obviously. I mean, we're making jokes a little bit here,
mm-hmm.
but it's important, again, as they're bearing witness in the last moments of a person or animal, by the way.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a dude. It's important to who they are, into their jobs, and sometimes leading to larger things, you know. And it's funny, is the thing is, it's technically, it's considered a right, but it's so second nature to them because it's so ingrained in their job,
right?
You know, but there are little things about it, like, you know, they have to ask permission from the dead. I mean, it's an important part of the ritual.
Yes.
You know, obviously they have to be in bird lupus. Look,
no, I get it.
You know, well, you can't just grab a spoon and, you know, you have to be in bird lupus for this.
Well, it's easy for them because they do only have the three forms.
Right. Bird lupus, bird crinos, and bird human. That's not right. Hamid.
Bird Hamid.
Bird Hamid.
Dead by Daylight?
As Bird Lady. That's a different thing. Or that Sweet D, That's Always Sunny. That's a good show, but that's not what we're talking about here.
Good call.
Thank you.
Yeah. And it's a thing for them as well, where the whole drinking of the eyes it's not a quick process.
No, and they're super vulnerable when they do it.
Oh, yeah.
It's a whole involved rite for them that's just second nature, but it's still a rite. That's still going to take some time.
Yeah. I enjoyed the fact that they, out of respect even, asked the dead for permission to do so.
No, that shit's important.
Right. Because if they don't and they just go do it, the rite doesn't even work.
And it's important to know, like, I mean, there is a role for it, you know, like from a behind the scenes standpoint, and, you know, the successes dictate how clear the visions are and how long they take,
mm-hmm.
which, again, considering that they're totally vulnerable while this is going on, it's kind of like peeking through the gauntlet. It's not the same thing, but it's kind of like that in terms of you just being a sitting duck.
No, I see what you're saying. Yep. Yeah.
A sitting duck. Bird. Duck's a bird, too.
I saw your face like, God damn it, I just made that joke.
Fuck it. It's there. Let's put a head on it.
I mean,
talk about it nevermore. Yes, CJ?
You did it again, you son of a bitch.
Was just going to let that one sit there for a little bit, but yeah. And one thing that I did notice going through this book a lot is they get really pissed off if you do not call them a raven. You call them anything else, especially a crow.
Yeah, they're not into that.
They're likely to fight you because of it.
You know what's funny about that to me, though? In terms of, and I'm using the air quotes here, packs of Korax. Mm-hmm. Packs of Korax. I just hate that rhymes. You know, the official term is murder. It's a murder of Korax, which is wrong because it's a murder of crows.
It's an unkindness of ravens.
Exactly. And they even acknowledge that in the book, which I thought was funny because I'm doing the research and I'm reading. It's like, on the rare times we form a group, we form a murder. And I'm like, no, you don't. Those are crows. You just spent the whole book telling me how much you ain't crows and you're going to name yourselves after crows. What the fuck?
That's awesome.
Right? And it's like, yeah, it is. It's an unkindness of crow or of ravens, which is already I love how we just name shit like that. Just we can't just go a pack or a flock. Like if it's flying, it's a flock. If it's on legs, it's a pack. We could just do that. We refuse as a society.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a troop of gorillas. It's, you know, it's a
fluffle of rabbits.
What?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's real?
Yeah.
Yes.
Group of geese, that's a gander. It's not a flock, that's a gander. What? Yeah. A murder of crows and an unkindness of ravens. And really, what is the difference? Let's not ask the Korax. We're not, I withdraw. Because we're going to get fought.
Yeah.
But
we're going to get fought and they're going to tell us 400 reasons on why.
But again, you know, that stuck with me that like as much as they hate being compared to crows or called crows or considered crows, they use the term for a group of crows as their term for a pack.
I kind of love that. I kind of love that.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of like PR mostly for them at that point. But yeah.
You know what I think it is? I think they as a species have acknowledged that murder just sounds cooler.
Yeah.
I can roll with that. Yeah.
I mean, it's all right. It's a murder of Korax.
Murder of Korax. Yeah, but like what happens when you murder a Korax?
Well, there's an investigation.
Probably.
Yes. Oh, you know, there is, and we'll come back to that. Because I'm not ready to talk about moots yet.
Okay.
Yep.
I remember that one.
Should we go over, you know, their part in the Imperium, the War of Rage, and how they stopped it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, let's face it, if we were more organized today, we would have done that already. But we're just kind of all over the place. That's so
yeah. Like a Korax.
Yes.
Hey. You see, it's on theme. It's not in professionalism. It's on theme. Oh my God.
Well, they had all the information. So why take out the ones who are giving you the information?
Yeah, war was good business for them, and they could play every side as long as they did not actively participate.
Which is really the genesis of them being Gaius Free Pass.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love how we were able to do that.
Well, I mean,
we kind of knew it already, but we're now saying it out loud.
Yeah, we're putting it all together. But it's always been there. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that they're able to freely work with everybody because the information they give is so important. And also, as an added bonus, you have other links to totems, or rather in the spirit broods.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to get a Fenris connection. You know, they consider it lucky to have to have Korax around. You have the connection with the Shadow Lords, which also is largely crows, and we're just they're leaning on the you don't know the difference, but you better know the difference, or we're mad about it. These guys.
You got their links with the Fianna and the Morrigan and stuff like that.
Yes.
Yeah, they were an essential part of keeping that information among all of everybody. And not even just Garu.
No, exactly. They get a free, they got the free pass everywhere.
One thing I very much enjoyed in their going over the War of Rage was when it started, as many Korax as they could got together and basically put their heads together to figure out what's going to happen here. And their two conclusions, or their big conclusion, was that the Garu were going to win. They already had that idea. And their big thing now just became like, yeah, let's run as much damage control, helping out who we can, and getting refugees and the wounded out of there. Like, there's some changing breeds that have to thank the Korax for still being around.
Big time.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah, definitely. You know, bumper off the comma sauce. But then again, maybe that's something here that obviously they're not mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Korax is a book, you know. And again, I remind everybody out there listening that we're using the second edition, the breed books, this time around. Because those breed books are, I mean, they're dedicated to each different changing breed. So it's a more comprehensive look.
It's a lot more information.
Right, even though shit gets retconned and changed through the editions, but this is the most comprehensive version of any of it, because they all share a changing breed book after this.
Mm-hmm.
This was also, however, before the Lost Breeds really existed.
Mm-hmm.
So the Grandor, the Apis, the Commentas, they weren't invented yet.
Okay. I was just taking a second to realize what you're saying, but yeah, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, that's why you don't see a mention of any of them. They didn't exist.
Yeah, how could they save them?
Right.
Essentially, because if they were around, they would have saved them.
Well, they would have tried, and sometimes, but you know, then again, when you look at those lost breeds, there were, at least in the werebats, their death was the second war rage. That was kind of a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they were kind of the other half of the Korax, kind of, sort of, but no mention. Well, that's why. And that's kind of, like I said, it's kind of a bummer because I would have been very curious to see how that relationship would have worked.
Yeah, that would have been really interesting to see. One thing I will also state with their interaction with the War of Rage, this is one of the cool parts that comes with them having a unified totem. They're all under Raven. About half the Korax actually wanted to take part and fight the Garu. It took Raven stepping in and saying, no, this is not your time to fight.
No, Raven knew they wouldn't survive.
Well, that's a bad idea. You know, and it's something we bring up a lot. You know, is the common through line is blame the Garu, the big meanies, you know, no one else here. Has ever done anything wrong.
It's absolutely here.
Of course. But, but it's something, and we recently talked about it in the Discord, you know, that little reminder that, well, you know, the Garu were created. I believe it was Drake and Doc I was talking with. We were talking about this, that, you know, the Garu were created to be Gaia's fangs. They were her warriors. That is a species that was built to kill in the name of and in the defense of Gaia.
Right.
So you have an entire species of professional soldiers and killers. Maybe don't fight them.
Yeah, that would, you know, like, kind of make the most sense.
Like, maybe if your job is essentially a delivery boy, you don't want to sucker punch the Spartan.
Yeah.
Where, you know, your whole job is to watch over the battlefield at the end of it to clean up what memories you can. Yeah, don't wait till the Garu are away. Wait till the Spartans are not here anymore.
Right?
If you're going to pick a fight.
You're the Apis. Your job is to pick out who should bang.
Yep.
That is not the fair fight. You shouldn't.
Is it 300? Looks at the other army and goes, hey, what's your profession? He goes, oh, I'm a potter. And you, what's your profession? Oh, I'm a carpenter. Spartans, what is your profession? They're all warriors. Done. They're not doing anything else. They will fuck you up.
Right.
And the Korax understood this.
Absolutely. They've at least Raven understood it and convinced the half that wanted to fight.
Well, much like the Nuesha. We're just like, nah, fuck no. Nope.
Yep, we're just going to stay away.
Hey, what's this? What's this in the Umbra? I'm going to see about this in the Umbra and not, like, pick up a stick and try to hit a fucking get a Fenris with it. I feel like that's the smarter move.
Yeah, see? Yeah, there were some smart changing breeds.
Oh.
Hey, there's a reason why there's only so many others standing.
Yeah, the fight, you know, again, the fight as they hand it over is a little ill-conceived. What can you do? But yeah, you have Gaia's trained soldiers, and maybe we don't pick that fight. But again, you look back to it, and we all know, or at least if you've been paying attention, we've called bullshit on the company line of the War of Rage for a while.
Yeah.
Because again, it's they have all the Pharah team up, and they're working together against the big bad Garu, because no other Pharah has ever done anything wrong.
No.
Yeah, it's nonsense.
Even if, like, two, maybe three of the other Pharah were to team up, the Garu wouldn't stand a chance.
Right. Like, I'm sorry.
And we know this. We're not stupid. But guess what? Didn't happen. So, Raven being the smart one, like, no, we're going to stay on the winning side of this. Do what you can. Gain the information you can.
And save who you can.
There right. You go.
And I mean, largely that all comes back down to do your job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Think about it that way. The War of Rage, the only two still doing their job were Garu and
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay, fine, I'll leave it out.
But well, you can leave it in, but I wouldn't go that far, but
they were doing what they were made for, maybe not their job.
Right.
Okay, thanks for saving it.
You know, yeah. You know, they were born to kill, just maybe not their cousins. But to be fair, they look, that's another episode all by itself, frankly. We have never done the War of Rage, the show.
We started to, and it ended up being something else.
We have talked about the War of Rage, of course, but we've never done a show on the War of Rage, and that'll come out of the
pipe. Yeah, eventually, I'm sure.
There's no reason not to.
I mean, hell, we could take all the little bits and pieces of every Farah episode we did and make that into a show.
Is that the edit you want to make?
Absolutely not.
All right, then that's a show we're going to do later at some point instead. But moving to past the War of Rage, we're talking Imperium as well.
Which they honestly weren't too... Like, of course, they saved what kinfolk they could to keep, you know, them out of the way. And this extended to everybody, even if they didn't know it. Like, the Bastet, who probably should be thinking the Korax... versus trying to hunt down Tweety. I like that. But for the most part, because they had that eye in the sky perspective and they were so close to the Garu, they were able to come out of it fairly okay. And they'd already been pretty selective with who went through their first change or who was kin.
Well, and that's a whole thing in terms of Korax and kin as well. Because they don't work like the standard shifter.
If we're going to switch right to that part.
Well, I mean...
Why not?
We right? don't have to, but it's a great segue.
Yeah. No, it's a right all on its own. It's the egg.
Yes. You know, there is the spirit egg.
Spirit egg, yeah.
Yeah, which is placed in the Umbra. and the Korax goes through their first change when that egg hatches. You know, and these eggs, of course, are closely guarded. Or they're supposed to be closely guarded. Supposed you know, watched over. Because that it's an egg,
well, that's,
essentially, you know. I mean,
it's also why it happens in the Umbra.
Yes, but there's plenty of things in the Umbra.
Yes.
The part about the whole process that really gets me is they're basically picking and choosing who will become Koraxes. Because as long as nothing happens to that egg, it will hatch.
Natural selection, man.
That's not quite it.
Their version of natural selection.
But yeah, it's like they'll have the kid go through the rite where they attach the hair to the spirit egg. And from that point, that kid's just waiting for that egg to hatch. And once that does, they're Korax now. They already know from like the other Korax that were around already know that this kid's probably going to change at some point very soon in the grand scheme of things. Where, you know, Garu, you never know.
No, that's true.
Right.
You know, the Korax absolutely do know. And again, each egg is assigned a guardian to watch over it, you know, and, you know, they try to stay in the neighborhood, but I mean, they're Korax. They are going to move every now and then. And that's the thing too, is like when that egg hatches, it's like a beacon in the Umbra. Screech of a new Korax spirit alerts every predator in the vicinity. You know, every Bane, every Black Spiral, any sort of, you know, hungry or unfriendly spirit is going to converge right down on that shit. You know, it's like its own little rite of cairn building, if you will.
Yeah.
So the guardian needs to get there quickly to make sure to help defend that site and help usher that Korax through. Otherwise, I mean, it's just bad news bears.
Which is crazy because, again...
Or bad news birds.
Bad news birds. They're not really fighters. So the defenders, if you will, need to know how to move.
Well, I mean, they certainly do have their fighters among them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's not their job.
Right.
So, I mean, you do the best they can. And I think it's better to be clever and quick than anything else. But it's an important thing. You know, the Korax work very differently in terms of how they breed like that. So it's, you know, it's certainly worth talking about.
I can imagine that if I were to guess, I would say half those eggs don't get hatched. Maybe a little less than half. Because again, they're not fighters. Whoever sent to defend maybe can't do the job. Or if they can, only barely. I wonder the amount, really, of how many of the eggs do not hatch.
If I remember correctly, nothing's ever directly said about it specifically. But
oh, I can't imagine they would.
I'd also point out, like, remember, these guys are also tricksters, so they might not be able to fight necessarily, but put this hatching egg somewhere where it might be relatively safe and everything else around it is just a nightmare.
That's a very good
point. Maybe you don't have to fight.
Yeah, you know how well it's hidden. But I mean, it's still, there's going to be the beacon, but
yeah,
it's the area, not the GPS coordinates specifically.
That beam of light right there. Go directly to it.
All right. You know, and you know, the new Korax, obviously there's the kind of the training period, if you will. And, you know, the Guardian takes the youngling under their wing.
You hate saying that so I'm hard.
So mad that I had to say that. Oh.
There's so many jokes that are just way too easy with this one.
Right. I think I need a break. Jesus.
Beak?
You're on probate. You're grounded, young man.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a bird brain stretch.
Going home. I need to go to bed. What is this? I'm not. I hate you both.
Audra's going to love this.
You guys are crumbs. Just crumbs thrown from a park bench. So, yeah.
yes, under their wing.
Well, you know, and there's obviously they're taught the ropes and, you know, they're required a lot of, we'll say, mental note taking, because they're often expected in many situations not to be able to repeat the events of what they have seen or of certain meetings verbatim.
Because they don't sell bad information. They don't sell speculation. It's got to be the facts.
Right. Just the facts exactly as they happen. That is so important to them.
How they're taken, it's not up to them. But as long as it's exact, that's what they care about. Which kind of just goes back to the whole eye thing, right? The good in what they see compared to the bad in what they see.
Well, and the context and what's the better. It's all important. And again, sharing the information accurately. And that goes into their litany, but we don't need to talk about that right this second.
An interesting little note that you could put on this is they're all about getting that accurate information out there to everywhere they can and as fast as they can. They're actually surprisingly okay with Weaver Tech compared to most other tribes and breeds. They're kind of all about the Weaver's advancement in the modern days and going on. They were full in on it.
Well, any advantage they can get at that point, right?
Which I get, but at the same time, I find a little curious.
Go on.
Well, clearly, especially as you lean modern day, or the closer you get to a modern day setting, the more the Weaver is a problem.
Right.
So while
technology's always advancing.
Right. But to such a degree, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, we've talked a long time ago, granted, but these conversations never really go away, of the power of the Weaver next to that of the worm and where the real threat lies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And no one can deny the exponential increase in technology and reliance on it. Like, the Weaver is at an all-time high in terms of power, and maybe is the guys who are supposed to be witness. The Korax maybe should lean a little more on the side of caution with all of that. But you get why they wouldn't, in terms of being able to use that technology to help further their jobs.
Right. It's a teeter-totter, if you will. It's a fine line they gotta walk.
Right? You know, it's that, look at this neat automated thing for our assembly line. Oh, I just got fired. Because the automated thing, damn it.
But then again, you have some Koraks that are like, oh shit, was anybody in this particular area when this shit was going down? No, but I've got a cousin who's got like 14 different TVs with 24-hour news cycles on.
Of course.
There's a good way to get some potential information.
I was going
to
say potential is a good way to put that, because, you know, we don't really go there, but how accurate?
Right.
Or, I could imagine Korax having, like, a specific message board set up for their Korax cant.
Well, I mean, if the Glasswalkers can do it, right?
Yeah.
Do you think they'd have, like, some kind of message board like that at the Moots?
That's not at all. how Korak's moods work.
I was trying to.
No, I know. It was very obvious. It's fine. The Korak's moods, first of all, they're always in the daytime. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just period. In fact, it's disrespectful to Helios for a Korak's moon to go beyond sundown.
See, that makes sense.
Yeah, there is a time where this shit is over. And they don't happen very often. Something interesting about the Koraks is they enjoy each other's company and they're totally social creatures, mm-hmm. but there's a limit.
It's like family.
Kind of. I knew someone once upon a time who described a house guest like a fish. that after 3 days, that shit's no good anymore. And that's kind of how the Koraks work with mm-hmm. it. Like, they're good to go out and hang out, go bowling together. They'll have some mm-hmm. beers. They'll have, like, a good party or some dinner and a conversation. But, like, if we're together for more than 2 days, we're at the very least going to start cramping each other style.
Oh, yeah. No, I can see it. Like, they get to show off all the shiny stuff they got.
They share stories. They have a good time. Yeah.
But as soon as that moot's over.
You bug me, kid.
Yep.
You got to get out of here.
Cramping each other's style. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, again, they don't do moots a whole lot. And the other thing about that, too, is there's not a whole lot of Koraks. I mean, there's not a whole lot of any shifter.
Right.
You know, but in the grand scheme of things. So, like, if you hold a moot, and a moot is a big deal, mm-hmm. you know, and it's always held at, like, the tallest tree
yeah.
they can find. They're always in bird lupus.
Well, it's kind of like a security thing.
Well, sure, but here's the problem. Like, if, let's say, a lightning bolt strikes that tree.
Yeah.
You have killed every Korax on, like, the eastern seaboard. And they know that. Mm-hmm. So they don't do it very often.
But these are only for the big, important events. Like, something big just went down to the Umbra. Or, let's just say, the Garu got a new, like, a High King. Probably time to start collecting stories, collecting information, figuring out what, you know, is going on. So... might be a good point to call moot.
Right. But again, it's got to be a big deal. And that's to say, you know, and it's very business. You know, mm-hmm. you look at a Garu moot and there's business, there's songs and stories. There's a lot of moving parts to a Garu moot. Mm-hmm.
There's a time and place for all of them.
Yeah. Like the Koraks moots, it's less formal and more about getting shit done.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's straight up business. The whole entire thing.
Yeah. But it's less formalities because of that. Though there are some things. You know, it's like, you know, the little ceremony to it. Like, yeah, they do offer a prayer to Helios. Fine. They offer a prayer to Raven. Cool. They do a roll call, right? Mm-hmm. But this is something I thought was really cool, right? Because it's not who's there. It's who isn't there.
Huh.
So like, yeah, let's go to Ferris Bueller, right? You got Ben Stein up there at the front of the class. Adams, Mills, you know. They're going to focus on Bueller because he's not there, right? Bueller. And now the thing here is because he's not there, they're naming him off. Anyone who has seen Bueller recently chimes up. Yeah, it's, no, he's fine.
He's in the middle of something.
Right. He's in Texas doing a thing. I saw him 2 weeks ago. Everything's cool. It's to keep track, you know. And if no one says anything.
Then there's a problem.
You know, what happens if no one answers, you know, to give the whereabouts of that person, a murder gets set up to go search for the missing Koraks. And, you know, hopefully they find him and everything's cool, but largely everyone's prepared to hear about their dead friend.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
But I think that's cool, you know, that it's not who's here, it's who isn't, and let's make sure they're all right.
Oh, it's a big deal. It's, because again, we what did we just say? There's not that many, so... Yeah, I can even see like a story being that the only Koraks game, that's that mission.
Yeah, I was actually going to bring that up later. But yeah, that's a great way to do that if you want to do a game of Koraks.
I could see that. That sounds cool as hell.
All right, and it's that sort of short-term mission
mm-hmm.
that you can get a murder of Koraks together. Where they're working for a bit and not
hate each other by the end of it.
Well, maybe they will.
Oh, but by the end of it, yeah. But they know there's
business. But they're not together long enough for it to be a huge problem.
Right.
And it's funny about that, too, is when they form murders, And we're going to get back to the moot for a second, or in a second. But the funny thing about that, too, is when they do form that pack, you know, that the murder, they operate on the committee principle. So, you know, whoever's loudest is the one in charge.
I remember reading this.
Yep.
They just yell. It's like It's Always Sunny. They're just going to yell over each other until...
Until someone breaks.
Yep.
And if you've ever walked past a power line covered in crows or ravens, it tracks.
Yeah. Oh, man. Jesus. They just keep fucking yelling.
Right? Like, oh my God, what a nightmare.
Yeah.
But back to the moot. You know, they talk about that. They do the roll call. You know, they'll go over the status of any local eggs, any new Korex are introduced, and again, quizzed about the events in the moots.
Oh, that was funny, too.
Yes.
They're quizzed to make sure they're all paying fucking attention.
Well, and have it all correct.
Yeah.
And if they're wrong, they get sent lower on the tree. Which, think about that. You have all the Korex on the tree for the moot. You're going to get shit on, is the thing.
Yeah.
As you are in the toilet position.
Metaphorically and literally.
Yes, that's the thing. Is literally, though, is they're putting you in a position for them to poop on you because you did a poor job.
You did a shitty job, so we're going to shit on you.
Yes, you did a shitty job, so you're going to be a shitty man. You're guess what? Your feathers are going to be white after all. It's a fun throwback. I think your eyes will be pink, but
you're going to have to hope for a rainstorm.
How did I work a pink eye joke into this?
That was beautiful. It was beautiful.
That shit happened.
Yes, it did.
That shit happened.
I thought you did that on a purpose, too.
Oh, I'm just existing through this.
Yeah, and after...
Yes. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. It was just like after the quizzing, that's where like the formalities kind of end. And it just becomes the going over business, all the new, and just straight gossiping.
Well, I see the gossiping as part of the business.
No, that is, but...
Yeah.
Again, it's sharing the stories, it's passing the information, and hey, maybe you had to pass some information to like a pack of Garu or something, but like, you know, Big Bird over here, I couldn't think of a bird name.
Jeff?
You know Jeff over here is going that direction, so maybe you give him that info to pass that along.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just gossip at that point.
I mean, it is, but it's important.
Yeah, like, they go over actual business and just straight gossip, because, yeah, this is the point where you just tell everything you know, everything you've seen.
Which, you know, again, it's part of the job, and it's also baked into their litany, is there's a level of just fucking common sense in this.
Yeah, I was but guessing.
Again, we'll get to the litany. You know, I've already waylaid us here and there the whole time, honestly. I have decided that welcome our structure is meaningless today.
Welcome to the show.
Once again, all over the place, like the Korax.
Right.
At the same time, they have to have a hell of a memory.
No, getting the information, getting it correct, it's super important. Jumping back on their aversion to each other, I guess.
Okay.
Well, again, you know, it's a bit of a contradiction, because again, we establish is like they like each other, they like hanging out, but they can't, they don't stick together
for so long.
Yeah, for very long. However, they do have camps.
Really?
Yeah, it's a bit of a mystery, you know, or a bit of a total contradiction, but they exist nonetheless. You know, you've got the Sun Lost, which I really probably should have saved for later, because I think these guys are particularly
all right.
You know, I don't know. Well, I'm not now, so too bad. These guys aren't technically a group.
They have a name.
Yeah, well, it's the name that the Korex gave them, because this is the name for the Korex who just said, thank you, but no.
So they just don't want to do their job?
Yes. These are the ones who have opted out and just wandered off into the Umbra. That's what we're going to do. They just fuck off, and normally that's it.
Thanks, but no but thanks. I'll see you later.
Yeah, but like, bye.
But this is also the ones that maybe you've seen too much in your time, and it's just time to say, yep, nope, I'm done. I'm retiring. Adios.
Also could be. They could be too old for this shit.
Okay.
So the Glovers or the Sunlost, either one now. You know, occasionally, like super rarely, they'll return briefly just to socialize because, again, they're social creatures. Mm-hmm. But then again, it's right immediately back away. We are not part of this. We have opted out. I unsubscribed to your newsletter.
I haven't talked in a few days. I need to get this shit off my chest.
Probably longer than that. Interestingly, though, well, before that, you know, it is super rare that they'll get other Korax will get reports from Sunlost, like through scratchings left somewhere or some sort of message. And it said that if that's done, if that happens, if one finds one of these messages from a Sunlost, it's because that Korax was meant to find the message, like its destiny.
Hmm.
Which is a little, I expect the Korax to be a little more down to earth, ironically, than that. it's a little mystic for them.
But then again, these are Korax who are just cruising off in the deep umbra.
Certainly, but the idea that the rest of the Korax would look at finding a message from them is true, but the idea of the regular Korax, you know, looking at finding a message from a Sunlost is fate. It seems a bit heady for the Korax, who are just a bit more pragmatic.
Yeah, I mean, you could have wrote some messages down.
Like, it just could be coincidence. It doesn't have to be destiny. But that's fine. I will say, though, when a Sunlost dies, a single feather shows up in the spot where the deceased's spirit egg hatched. No one knows how it gets there. It just happens.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty neat.
So it could die somewhere far away.
But yeah, wherever the egg hatched, there's going to be a
single feather.
Which I guess is a good way to keep track of losing one. It's kind of like a Green Lantern ring.
How the hell were you able to bring that around to Green Lantern?
Well, if you're holding a Green Lantern ring, it's because a Green Lantern's dead.
Yeah, I know. That's why it's funny.
You think murder's funny, Danny? You sick...
A murder of Korax can be very funny. Maybe some information they have is just jokes.
So a murder of Green Lanterns is just hilarious? You fucking monster.
Is he hiding that yellow ring from you?
Fucking right.
Ow!
Danny Tyson, man of murder.
You're welcome.
That's going to be your intro next episode.
International Man of Murder?
I'll take it. I didn't say international. You said international.
Please. Yeah. Please add that.
No. I'm going to move on.
Okay.
The next one, it's the Morrigan, which, CJ, you brought up briefly just by name earlier.
It's definitely an interesting camp, that's for sure. That's the right word.
Yeah, it is a camp. And I'll agree, because it's, and funnily enough, and I don't know if, you know, it wasn't intentional if I was inspired by it, because I guarantee I forgot about this camp from the Korax book one time when I was writing, you know, like a decade after reading the book. But it's possible.
Oh, I'm sure.
But here, the Morrigan, there are only three members. Always and only three. I wrote a Silent Strider pack called The Dark Cloud that was always six members. Same way. Like, the pack had existed for, like, a couple hundred years, because when a member died, it was replaced.
Immediately?
As close to immediately as possible, you know? Always and only six. But this is the Morrigan. There's, again, always and only three. Always women. And they serve Raven's less pleasant aspect. They are hardcore warriors. And whenever a Korax joins the Morrigan, she loses her name and takes a new one. One of the faces of the Morrigan from Legend. And I don't know shit about this Legend. CJ, can you help me with this? Or are you also in the Tallgrass?
I know a little bit about it. It's primarily just like in real world Legends and stuff. The Morrigan is like a goddess of war who exists in like these three different aspects and forms. And once again, this is one of those things of like through modern interpretation and the number of oral history stories told about this. There is too many things to go into, but it is always the three. They're always associated with Ravens. And yeah, no, they show up on battlefields. They're about the war, the battle, everything. It's a badass character. If they show up in a Legend, some serious shit's going down.
Oh, absolutely.
That's fucking cool.
And again, like when they join, you know, that Korax loses a name, takes a new one from the legend, and it's Bibde Namain in Morigu.
Yeah. Maybe? I'm not going to attempt to pronounce it myself.
Well, one of us has to, so I'm gonna roll the die.
Jump on that grenade.
Yeah.
So that's their name from now on.
Right, one of the three, yeah. That's who they are from now on. Like, it doesn't matter if you have known this Korax for, like, 50 years. It doesn't matter if it was your cousin.
Mm-hmm.
If they get picked, that woman, as she was, dies the second they get the new name.
That's kind of badass.
Right, like their identity is just gone, and they are one of these three, quote, forever. All they live for is battle from that moment.
That is seriously badass.
It is pretty cool. It's a shame it's so limited.
Uh-huh.
But that there can only be the three. Yeah, but and they can only... Right, but like if from a player aspect, that's a cool game.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh... Yeah, again, you're very limited on what happens at that point. Now, a camp that's less limited but totally isn't
okay.
is the Murder's Daughters, and they're like the JV squad of the Morrigan.
Oh, so
they're the Morrigan wannabes.
Yep.
So is it more of they're hoping to get picked?
Yes.
Do they always get picked?
They have never been picked.
Holy shit.
Oh. They're the JV squad, the Kmart Morrigan. Is they're all about the battle, and they're like they're not. It's not that they're not kind of badasses, like in terms like they.
Oh, I'm sure they still are. They do dumb work to be
right. They do dumb shit like pick fights with leeches on the regular. And I say dumb shit because again, they children Helios cool, uh-huh. But not made for combat.
They not made for combat, right?
But yeah, they pick fights all the time because they think, yeah, if I'm the biggest bitch, I'm the baddest bitch on the block, I'm going to be picked to be the Morrigan, and never once has it happened.
That's, mm-hmm. Oh, man, I want to say awesome. That kind of sucks, actually.
But a little of both, like, right?
But it's yeah, exactly. A little bit of both. I can see a game more of that.
Yeah, that would be more accessible, but not like a whole lot. Because like at least these ones get to keep their personalities, right?
That's awesome.
JV Murder.
Oh, JV Murder.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool. I love it. And then the fact they've never been picked, and yet I can see
they still
it.
Try.
They still, and I'm sure they're all still trying their fucking hardest.
Right, and never. Nope.
I want to see that game. I mean, well, because I think combat is probably my favorite part of this game, but you know.
Is it really?
Yeah. Hmm. Well, I mean, I'm sure it has a lot to do with your system, but that's still besides the point.
I appreciate that. Next is the Chasers.
Okay, sounds cool.
Yes.
but that's it? It just sounds cool and then I'm done?
I did a quote because there's so little written about them.
Okay.
So I just pulled it. You know, chasers are loose murders of young brats like yourself who get together to play X-Files. Yep, it's real fun to go poking after spooky stuff, ain't it? Just make sure that if you join a band of chasers, at least one of you has the brains to keep an eye on where the exits are. Finding a nest of beans is great. Deciding to play clean out the nest with your little buddies is a one-way ticket to the great deep fryer in the sky.
Yeah, there's not a
whole lot there. So I took the quote.
But that's enough.
Yeah, it is. It's not the last one, though. I saved one.
Okay.
And this is, I think, my favorite, which is why, is the Hermetic Order of Swift Light.
Say that again.
The Hermetic Order of Swift Light.
Okay. And it already sounds cool.
Well, these are it's far more mundane already. This is like the business wing of the breed.
You did it again.
That was intentional. Fuck off. These are the information brokers. You know, they do their job.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. For the right price. They flat out have an HQ in Manhattan, like just off of Madison Avenue.
Oh, okay. For the right price.
Yep.
I can see these guys being the fashionistas.
I suppose. By tradition, there's only one actual raven in the joint at their office.
Hmm.
But the rest make money by hiring out as freelance couriers and the like. The business wing.
That's awesome.
He hasn't come up in a long time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in my...
I know exactly what you're saying.
Various, you know, yeah. The Corex I use is an information broker. What is he, you know, he has contacts. He shows up. He gets the info. He makes the trades and the deals. You know, he's a member of the Swift Light. That's a rebel.
I was trying to remember his name.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the ones I like best, I think they're the most inclined
to get the best information.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Corex, but it's the easiest one to mesh.
Okay.
You know, because, oh, by coincidence, or, oh, you met because of one thing. No, you made a phone call and you said, Rebel, it's Jude. I need some information. And he goes, okay, well, that'll be $3,000. Fine. I'll have it wired or whatever, you know. It's easier that way. Or even, you know, hey, Sekhmet, what's up? What's up? You got any, I got something you might be interested in. How's that wallet looking, buddy? So I'll tell you, I'm awful hungry, and I may have made reservations at this restaurant. You know, either way.
Oh, yeah. I can see both ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. I mean, the Morgan and then the mother's, the murder's daughters.
Yeah.
Those are fucking badass, but, oh, man, that's so cool. All more reasons why they just free pass.
I mean, and they're affable. Corex are like, I mean, they can be irritating, but largely they're likable, and they're smart about all that too. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I mean, we talked about the moots, but they also encourage each other. Like, you know, the Corex, it's encouraged to like crash Garu moots to get some information. And usually it's pretty cool. You know, they talk about doing stuff like, yeah, go hang out with some Red Talons. And, you know, be a spotter on their hunts. Drop by a Fianna moot. You know, sing some songs with them. Go to a Get moot and get drunk and puke all over the place and lose to an arm wrestling, you know? Find some Nuisha and run with them as long as you can. You know, it's stuff like that.
Builds a rapport.
It builds a rapport. And it also reminds the Korax why they're there, what they're doing. And maybe reminds everybody what they're all fighting for. Because you notice everything I said there was like a leisure activity, was having a good time.
If I remember correctly, they even specifically state, like, yeah, don't crash like the beginning of the moon, crash after the business. So it is just that.
Yeah, it's... Sorry, go ahead, man.
Yeah, it's like after the challenges and everything are done, so you're not like jumping in as somebody's having a fight to the death over there, you know, because somebody wronged them or somebody sold their Grand Clave, whatever. Yeah, no, join in for the fun. Share some stories these guys might not ever get the chance to hear.
Right. And while you're doing that, by the way, you're making a good impression and extending that free pass. Because suddenly Heckelfang and Apehanger think that this Corex guy is pretty neat. So we're going to have his back when he comes around.
That's... I can see it even... They crashed in. They crashed after the business. But during the business, maybe they were sneaking and trying to sneakily gain some information. Stealthily gain some information.
Who's going to care about the raven sitting up in the tree?
Or who's going to notice?
Yeah.
See, and I mean, we talked earlier about it, and I said, you know, this is one of those things that we just awkwardly throw down near the end of the episode, because, like, we've been meaning to get to it, and it's not fucking now, here it is.
It's fine.
But their litany, you know, it's, there are no secrets.
So is this one of the ones where it's just super vague?
Well, no, but I would tell you if you...
No, the entire thing, not just the one.
No, most of them are pretty, you know, okay. I'll tell you all about it.
All right. No secrets. Got it.
You know, again, it's the duty to uncover every secret that they can, even the unpleasant ones. Left alone in the dark, secrets fester. They rot and they turn into some unpleasant things. It's their duty to uncover the hidden. Because odds are, if someone's taking the effort to hide some information, that information is dangerous.
And or important.
Right. Which leads into share what you know. This information doesn't do any good in a bottle. Doesn't matter if you know the three magic words that'll save the world, as long as those are locked in your brain, they're not doing anyone any good, including yourself.
Huh.
And this actually comes back to the thing about sharing information, because if you think about it, that also makes you a target. The sooner you spread the word, the better. Because if you're the only one who knows the secret of, you know, then you are the only target.
I like that.
Next is teach them what they'll learn. which is not everyone accepts the information that they're given. And sometimes the people who won't listen are the ones you really need to listen. Raven has authorized the use of, quote, unnecessary and ridiculous force.
This is where a good prank might come into play.
It very well could. I'm sure the information has to get through. Next, protect the eggs. This doesn't need to be a conversation.
Yeah, that's obvious.
Right. Remember why you're here.
Okay.
Is we are not the fighters. We're the scouts and the communications officers. You know, stupid heroics is a good way to get yourself killed. Your job is to get the information and get out, preferably without the enemy seeing you.
Having wings probably makes that a whole lot easier.
Yeah, you know, it's Red Bull. And the truth matters. Partial or inaccurate information gets people killed. You are not allowed to skimp on your observations for any reason.
Hmm.
So this is where that quiz really comes into play at those moots, is if you can't give us the exact information, what you doing, kid?
Right, you're no good to us. You are not doing your job. You are failing Gaia. You know, being put down on that lower rung of the tree. Ha ha, poopies, because of a joke. No, that's punishment for failing at your job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, technically just broke a bit of the litany.
Right? You failed it. You have failed litany. But we're not done yet. Next is everything's part of the cycle. And what that means is don't judge anyone or anything out of context. Don't jump to conclusions about whether something or someone is necessary until you figure out what they're doing and why they're doing it.
Get all the facts.
Mm-hmm. Next, don't play favorites. Korax owe both Helios and Raven tremendous debts. Demonstrate proper reverence to both.
Smart.
Right? Next is fly. You've been given an unimaginable gift in your wings, so use them. Oh. Fly because it's did certain no else in your family can experience, but it, beyond that, experience everything you can. Talk to everyone you can. Learn as much as you can. You know, look at things from as many angles as you can. Why? Because you can.
Oh.
See, it's actual flight. It's metaphorical flight. Fucking make it happen. And then finally, laugh. You know, look at the humor and everything. Because there is, but, you know, after drinking dead people's eyes and seeing the horrors in the horror, not horror. I mean, you could see horrors too.
See
the horrors of being, like, there's a lot of, but again,
there's a lot of depressing shit out there.
Exactly. Yeah. It comes back to that, to the dark shit that people overlook when they talk about Korax. Again, and I was talking about earlier, this is why you laugh.
Yes.
To keep from going crazy.
It gets close to happening way too often.
Probably, certainly. And I mean, we've gone a lot about, I mean, we've talked a good deal about them. I think it's important, the thing we usually do, you know, is to talk about how you're using your Korax. As a storyteller, you know, bringing in an NPC to drive that information, your character, like your rebel.
Mm-hmm. I like that version of it.
Yeah, who will show up and give the stuff, and not even to everybody.
Only what's necessary, because he was the one that got paid.
No, only to who is necessary.
That too.
You know, if you recall, and CJ, you did the postmortem, so you saw Rebel in the guilty ever briefly. He showed up, he went to the client, told the client what he needed to know, gave him all the information, but you weren't privy to that conversation.
Right.
And it's the point I'm making, is he did his job and he left, but he didn't walk over and, like, do a little jig and say, hey, everybody, I'm a Korax because I'm special. Don't cheapen it.
He didn't tell you everything he was thinking at that moment. Everything he knows, no.
And Korax are known for babbling and going on, so maybe that's something that would have happened if he would have stuck around and hung out. But, you know, there's a difference, and you, of course, can do that. Again, it's in their nature, they're social. We talked about it. We talked about how they'll hang out, and that's fine. But it's also fine, again, you know, he was a member of the order there. So getting in and getting out was more on point in terms of what he was doing.
Right.
So, as usual, it's keep in mind what your character is and don't just. But, you know, as a one-note Korax just dropping in and giving, you know, a whisper into somebody's ear, that can happen. And it's a good way to move things along without making a big deal. You can totally make a big deal, hey, everyone, there's a Korax, but maybe we should treat it like everyone is doing their jobs and they have something to do. Time and place for both, but it's about picking that time and place.
Right. I see it. No, it's that's cool. And again, goes back to a free pass and why, and probably arguably the most important of the Pharaoh, other than defense in Gaia's name.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, the werewolf's role is the most important because the game is Werewolf the Apocalypse. And that comes first.
Yes, I agree. And I also go back to the point where the werewolves are the only ones who are actively trying to save the apocalypse, trying to save the world.
Well, you know, you got to give the rest of the Pharaoh credit. They're doing their jobs, too.
There's just not as many of them.
Right. You know, and it's not their game.
True, yes.
You know, they get to guest star sometimes, but it's not, the game is not Zoo Force, the hey, we're all friends. It's Werewolf the Apocalypse. So werewolves come first.
Korok's probably a close second.
I could see that. And again, they're the most well adapted.
And yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at. I was just making fun while I was doing it.
Fair enough.
But they are probably the most well adapted and arguably out of the rest of the shifters, at least in my head, the most important part. How else are you getting that information?
Well, they are important, but I would argue, I wouldn't even argue. I would offer in that if you are going to play a game where you are letting someone play a Pharaoh, the Korax is the way to go to not, hinder? I don't want to say fuck up your game, but
not hinder,
kind of pee on the lore.
Like the Korax has a reason to be there easily, right. You know, could be information, could be hanging out with this pack to see what they do. Maybe a little bit of gossip here and there.
Exactly. And it's something you can do and not be a Henki Yokai game and not be in a Handi game or a weird period game or a Savage Age game for that matter. And forget weird period. The Savage Age is another, you can cross those streams. But if you're the guy going, you know, I would love to play a Khan in this pack of Garu and you're not in a Henki Yokai game or, you know, the answer is probably I'd better not.
Yeah, there's a lot of Pharaoh out there that are still kind of kill on sight on either way.
Exactly. You know, hell, we just did Naga a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And guess how many groups you could do with a Naga? You should watch that episode if you're unclear. That is not compatible. So, you know, the Korax, I think, it's a good one to work your way in. You know, and just remember while, you know, yeah, they talk a lot, they talk fast, they can be annoying. You don't have to just be comic relief. There is a dark side. It is the world of darkness, you know?
Right.
And they see a lot of shit. And, you know, make sure when you're creating a Korax, either as a player or as an NPC, you remember that aspect of it too.
The shit's important.
Right? Like imagine being, you know, a person, a human, a Hamid Korax, who has lived his life, you know, maybe he's 20 and the fucking egg finally hatched. I don't know what, right? But now, now your job is to drink people's eyes and shit.
Ugh.
Right? Like the first couple of times, how many times did you throw up?
Oh, I imagine. Yeah. A lot.
You know, and then like you have to hold the knowledge of the dead person's last moments in your head. Fuck, man.
How many people have you found in a back alley who just went out in the worst way possible?
Right. Like, you might smell of whiskey constantly. You might be drunk every day just to try to forget that shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's food for thought, you know? It's something, a more, and even then, because you don't want to turn being drunk into a joke. This isn't a comedy.
Right. No, you know, I get it.
The World of Darkness is not a comedy. There's room for humor here and there. I mean, you've listened. I do it. But, you know, shit also gets dark.
Oh, yeah.
Well, y'all ain't seen the half of it.
Well, I have. I think everyone else listening who's into the Let's Plays hasn't gotten close.
I'm going to do, there's just some shit's going to happen.
I know, and I'm excited.
Any other thoughts? I know there's stuff we didn't talk about gifts. We didn't talk about fetishes. We never do that shit.
It's not important. It's not the character. No. That's not the lore anymore.
Right. CJ, do anything else you guys want to add?
Got nothing specifically. We went through a good bit of it aside from like the real like nitty gritty where it's like you might as well read the book yourself at that point.
Very true.
Yeah.
And I mean, you should. It's a good book.
Yeah, go for it. Read the book. It's worth doing. But yeah, I think the best point to make is remember that as the Korax, they see some dark shit and it's important to those tricks and the laughs to offset that. Because you don't want them to go crazy, but it's a cool idea and it's a cool concept to bring. score one for the Korax. I mean, they're fucking cool. There's a reason why Korax was among the last of the list here.
Oh, yeah, we wanted to save that for... We didn't want to do, like, all the good ones immediately. And we end up saving, what, Naga and Korax back-to-back. It's like, those are both pretty cool.
Yeah, like I said, there's a reason we did it. Well. So,
CJ, any final thoughts?
No, not really. It's just, but I will say, after going through this book and taking a more deep dive approach to the Korax, I've got some ideas for NPCs coming up that I would not have considered until I actually looked more into them. Because, yeah, once you get outside of the all about the knowledge, all about the chatterbox aspects, they've got a good bit of depth to them.
Yeah, agreed.
Definitely. I mean, my favorite, non-Garu.
Your number one favorite? Because you said they were, Naga was among your favorite, but...
Naga are among my favorite, but I think Koryx are better. I mean, there's the Gronder, but they're dead, so they don't count.
So they don't count.
If I could play a... If I had to play a Pharah, and it wasn't... And I couldn't play one of the dead ones, yeah, no, I'd probably go with the Koryx.
Yeah. See, I said I wouldn't play a Naga in that case, because I couldn't... It'd be incompatible with the game.
Yeah, well...
And, you know, I'm not going to fuck up the game, because I want to. You know, no. Koryx, done. Easy.
It's the one that makes the most sense. It doesn't make it easy.
It does for a storyteller, because it makes the most sense.
For a storyteller, fucking, sure.
You know?
I'm just saying...
It's not all about you, Danny.
I'm just saying I don't think I'd be very good at it, because, again, the dark shit they see playing the tricks... Keeping the laughter and the fun to offset those things. I don't think I would be very good at that, personally. But
no, I don't think that'd be your wheelhouse.
No. So, yeah. That's the Korax.
It is. And on that note, it's time for us to fly. So, on behalf of everyone here at Scratcher Wolf Studio, yeah, Daniel Tyson, CJ, myself, want to say thank you for listening and all your support. Make sure you take care of yourselves, take care of each other. Keep your claw sharp, your head on the swivel. Ka-caw. Sitting duck. Bird. Duck's a bird too.
I saw your face like, god damn it, I just made that joke.
Fuck it. It's there. Let's put a head on it.